Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this, the 30th day of June, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to hang out with the merry denizens of The Horn chat room. Yes, indeed. If you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click chat room, click... pick yourself out a screen name and a password and sign in. You will be in the capable and good company of Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Little Gray, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, still was born at night, not last night, and has chosen not to fold space and become Man Cave, because the Man Cave is, I trust, right hot right about now. Trey has wandered into the room. More will be along presently, I have no doubt. No doubt whatsoever. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday for this final day of June 2016, and I have excellent news to share. Thanks to Peggy. Thanks to Peggy, indeed, we have only $40 remaining, $40 to beat the Swede for June and keep it rolling into July. We've got $40 to go because this is, after all, a listener-supported broadcast operation. And, we try to raise $200 every night. $40 to go, $40. To beat the Swede for the month of June. Hoghead has wandered into the chat room. Good evening, Hoghead. And courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, coming through loud and clear, ever so slightly thorny, on my 1978 CompuColor 2, Brother Bob. A fine machine, that CompuColor 2. A fine machine, indeed. Treat it kindly. It's probably a museum piece, Brother Deacon Asa. Yes. And there's Jules wandering into the chat room. And, of course, yes, a reminder, if you would like to help knock down that remaining $40, please tell me we can do $40 in 3 hours of radio tonight. If you'd like to knock down that remaining $40, then just send go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on Contribute, and click on, go through the fields there, by which you fill out your name, your address, all that stuff. Don't bother with what you do and where you do it. Get to the next screen and bang, Bob's your uncle. And I'm not really anybody, but I mean, I'm somebody's uncle, but never mind. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, that's available too. You can always send in checks and money orders to The Horn. The Horn, made payable to. The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I never see him. That's Boss Man Wayne's province. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And drop me a note if you're going to use the U.S. mail service. That way I can tell Boss Man Wayne he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck and only take his trusty... fire-hardened laminated axe handle with him in case he runs into a Klansman. Because remember, the Klan also gets their mail at that same UPS store location. Well, thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon. Gerald says, loud and clear on my Timex Sinclair computer tonight. Very good. It takes a licking and keeps on ticking. Yes, indeed. It is about 5 minutes past the hour. It is indeed the thorn in the side Thursday where we celebrate those manifestations of right-wing thought that make you go, yow! And you know what? We've got some. Got some. One of the darling issues of the right wing is and has been, God, I can't remember when it wasn't, tort reform. And what they mean by tort reform is the right wing does is essentially making sure that nobody who ever gets hurt or maimed or killed by a corporation or by anybody that they like or anybody who donates to their causes or anybody who fronts the Republican National Committee can ever be sued. Okay, that's damage caps, limitations on monetary awards, all of those things. Attempts to basically close the courthouse doors to people who've been injured and maimed and killed. Or their personal representatives. And they've been largely successful. I mean, for instance, in medical malpractice, the number of people who actually get... Now, remember, the third leading cause of death in the United States is medical malpractice, medical neglect. And the number of people who actually sue over that is somewhere south of 3%, last number I saw. And that's not even the number who win. So... The right wing has been very successful in that regard. But it extends to things like products liability, places where defective products wind up killing and maiming people. You get the idea. This, however, is a new low. No kidding. A really, really sleazy new low. We have to go to Colorado to find it. And it is about 17 shades of absolutely blood-curdlingly disgusting. And it goes back, it goes hand in hand, if you will, with something I've talked about for a very long time now, an issue relating to our gun culture and our death rate and the horrors that are perpetrated across this country by the world's largest, most powerful, most well-funded terrorist organization, the National Rifle Association. Well, okay, so here's how it goes. It was 4 years ago when, what's his name? And I'm sorry, I can't remember it. The murderers all run together after a while. James something, wasn't it? Shot up a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado at the midnight premiere of a Batman movie, I think. I'm sure we all remember it all too well, and dog only knows the people who were in that hellscape, that abattoir, will likely never forget it. And probably many of them wind up dreaming about it on all too many nights, even though, you know, even these 4 years now passed. James Holmes. Thank you, Marty. Thank you. Midnight premiere of The Dark Knight Rises. Dude thought he was the Joker. But it's okay because we want people, the National Rifle Association wants people, even people who think they're the joker, the National Rifle Association wants them to have easy access to firearms. Sure. What could possibly go wrong? But James Holmes killed 12 people. He wounded, maimed, shot, hurt, harmed 70 more. Now, the 12 who were killed were, I think we can all agree, wrongfully killed. In other words, they didn't have it coming. There had been no writ of execution issued against them by any arm or branch of government. They were just trying to go to the damn movies. So those were 12 what the law would call wrongful deaths. 70 other people were wounded to one degree or another. Now, as I have mentioned in the past, one of the things that never gets talked about in all of these horrors is what happens in the aftermath. Because an aftermath there is indeed. There are monumental hospital bills. For many, there were attempts at and ongoing, for all I know, struggles toward rehabilitation. James Holmes had neither a pot to piss in nor a window to throw it out of. A significant number, I am sure, of those people who were shot and survived had no relevant insurance to cover them, because this is, after all, a brutal country that does not hold that access to health care or insurance, therefore, is a human right. Come on, Hillary, you can say it. Health care is a human right. No weasel words. No affordable health care is a human right. Just health care is a human right. You can say it, Hillary. I know you can. I mean, you know, if the people on Wall Street will let you. God knows T-Rump won't. And maybe since he won't, she won't feel like she needs to. I don't know. But the fact remains that in these mass murders and mass maimings, mass shootings, there is an unremarked aspect that plays out long after the parachute for-profit media have packed up and gone away to the next shooting scene, the next abattoir. And the people who are killed and or their representatives and the people who survive are left to fend for themselves and try as they might to figure out how to get compensation for that which was taken from them, whether it be life itself or the ability to enjoy same or a diminution thereof. Or the loss of services as a spouse, as the law terms it, or the loss of consortium, or the pain and the suffering and the emotional damage. All of these things are elements of a civil harm. Or just the straight-up economic losses of the medical bills. Well, in the case of the Aurora shooting, it took 4 years to get the case through the courts. But the victims of that shooting sued Cinemark, the movie theater corporation, the movie theater chain, where they were injured. Why did they sue Cinemark? Well, if you were to ask some right-wing POS, said right-wing POS would say that they were, well, what did, what? I mean, when we talk about a right-wing POS, is there any better example of a right-wing POS than, say, George W. Dimleader Bush? Well, back when, I forget, was it when he was running for president the first time or the second time? Along about the same time that he was saying that medical malpractice laws kept many gynecologists from practicing their love of American women, he said it, I didn't. He also said of someone who had the wrong leg cut off in an operation, you know, the right one was supposed to come off, but they took the left, and then they, oopsie, well, we're going to have to get the right one, too. We'll just call you Shorty. In that situation, Dimleader, George W. Bush, scion of America's greatest Republican family, remarked that that person, or perhaps it was the person, the woman who had had the wrong breast removed in a mastectomy and wound up with a double radical mastectomy instead of a single one. I can't remember if it was the leg or the breast, but of that person, George W. Bush, Dimleader, Pinhead, Pencil Neck Geek, said, that person has just won life's lottery. No, he really did. In the privileged world of George W. Bush and other Republicans, if you get maimed by a doctor and you get an opportunity to sue for the damages done to you, you have won life's lottery. So in the Republican world, the families of 12 people and 70 other people as well won life's lottery because they got shot by James Holmes when they just tried to go to the goddamn movies. Yeah, okay. So, all the plaintiffs had in this matter was the movie theater. Not going to have any luck getting any money out of the gun manufacturer. The gun was not defective. In fact, it worked as advertised. It was brilliantly effective at slaughtering innocent human beings. So they sued the movie company. Well, last month, a state jury, in the trial court of Colorado, in the state court there, a jury tried and true, heard the evidence and ruled that Cinemark had no liability whatsoever for the massacre. A state court jury in Colorado, tried and true, heard the evidence of the maimings, the killings, the woundings, the butchery, heard the evidence that it would not have cost much at all, if any, for Cinemark to take steps to keep people from bringing guns, you know, like a magnetometer, a metal detector, something like that, and said, nah, screw those people. Screw them. Now, to be fair, I don't know if Colorado has contributory negligence, comparative negligence, comparative contributory negligence. But as a result of having tried the case and won, Cinemark, through their pettifogging highly paid defense counsel, have filed a motion for the maimed people and the legal representatives of the dead people to pay their legal bills. Yeah. Particularly, the Cinemark movie theater chain, the third largest movie theater chain in the United States, is asking the court to award them the princely sum of $699,187.13, because they're lawyers and they will measure it down to the halfpenny, baby, for defending against the lawsuit. $699,187.13. Cinemark, in essence, saying, hey, we don't care what happened to you in our movie theater. We sold you a ticket. We were going to show you the movie. We had popcorn hot and fresh and ready to go and wildly overpriced. We had fountain pop for you. Junior Mints, Jujubes, Jordan Almonds, Baby Ruth Bites, hot dogs, buttery goo for your popcorn if you want it. But we didn't have to do anything to keep you from being murdered. We didn't have to do anything to keep you from being shot and maimed. This is Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, amen, under God. But you sued us, didn't you? And we won. We won. Oh, we won. We brought in our pettifog and defense lawyers, and they hoodooed a jury, and the jury bought it. And the jury sent you money grubbing, bleeding, suffering, bleeding heart plaintiffs packing. Well, pay up, suckers! Let me see if I can get my Gazinta machine going here. There we go. So we got to go. Okay, so clear. 699187.13, 82 Gazinta. That's right. Living and dead alike, each plaintiff is on the hook to Cinemark for $8,526.67 each. It's a hell of a movie ticket. And this is one of those wet dreams of the right wing. Whenever the U.S. Chamber of Commerce puts an ad in a local paper saying, like they do West Virginia, West Virginia is a judicial hellhole. Whenever they do that, they point to the fact that there is an ancient standard in the law that says each party is responsible for their own fees. And, of course, they want that done away with. they want it. They want to reduce the likelihood of any of the maimers, the whatever, tortfeasors is the technical term. They want to reduce the likelihood of them ever being sued by holding over the heads of the wounded, the injured, the butchered, the maimed, the killed, the threat that if they do not ultimately prevail, that they're going to have to pay legal fees like this. Now, there was another lawsuit in federal court in Colorado. On June the 24th, that court dismissed that lawsuit that said the chain had been negligent. And the court has said that Cinemark shall be entitled to reasonable costs. The court has not yet decided what those reasonable costs are. You know, I doubt if there will be a change.org petition or a move on petition or anything like that. But the only recourse anyone has against a giant corporation like Cinemark is to vote with your feet and your wallets. If Cinemark is your local Octoplex, don't go. Now, this is not me telling you don't go, but, you know, if you have any sympathy for the people who were victimized by the negligence of Cinemark and not even have, you know, it's America. At this point in time, metal detector's probably a wise choice. Sure would have saved 82 lives of various degrees of maiming and killing that night 4 years ago. If anything else, James Holmes would have had to start shooting there. Or maybe he could have just been taken down when the thing went beep, 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 beep. Because, see, James Holmes took, you know, because he was mad, I tell you, mad. He took his madness out, his criminal intent, his mens rea out on 82 innocents. And it would be uncivilized to do anything like what James Holmes did to, say, the CEO of Cinemark Corporation. So the only choice we have is to punish them financially. Huh? So after the program's over this evening, I'm gonna check and see if my local Octoplex is Cinemark. If it is, I'm going to find them online and send them a note. Let's see. I'll bet. Let's see if it is. CINEMARK.com. Why, look, there they are. They got a website and everything. About. Okay, let's click about. Hey, contact us by email. There's a link. They've even got a phone number, 800-246-3627. They're headquartered in Plano, Texas. So, you know, I'm just going to let them know that anytime I feel like going to the movies, that I will make sure that the movie theater that I go to is not a Cinemark property, because they have proven in Colorado that they have no interest in the safety of their invitees for business purposes, to whom, incidentally, they owe a high duty of due care. How in the world did the plaintiff's lawyer screw this one up? Brother Deacon Gerald telling me it looks like Huntington and Bridgeport, West Virginia, are Cinemark properties. So, yeah, I really am. I'm going to send him an email saying, listen, I'm going to make sure that I never set foot in one of your properties again, because, one, you have no interest in keeping your patrons safe, and two, if someone happens to get hurt because of your negligence, you'll bill them $699,187.13 for trying to get redress of their injuries from you. Oh, this is one of those times when it would be really, really cool to have one of those 5 million people audiences. God, I'd have to be on the air 24 hours a day just to take the calls. Because, you know, 5 million people sending emails and making phone calls to Cinemark, it might actually have an impact on them, or some influence. Of course, it's not lost on me that they're headquartered in Texas, a place that has next to no protections whatsoever for anybody from any kind of gun crime. That just seemed like an especially apropos thorn. Yeah, you're right, Marty. James Holmes propped open a behind-the-screen exit door so he could bring in his weaponry. And the lawsuit said that the exit doors should have been alarmed, even though they weren't emergency exit doors. You would think that a movie theater would want to have alarms on their doors. It certainly wouldn't have broken the Cinemark bank to do that. It would have been reasonable. It would have been prudent. It would have been a display of due care. But Cinemark says, nah, you 82 people, why don't you just piss off? Or off and die, at least the ones who haven't already. Thanks for visiting Cinemark. Would you like some popcorn? Mm-hmm. Scott in San Diego says, I'm wondering, did Cinemark at least reimburse the injured patrons or their survivors the price of the ticket and snacks, since they didn't exactly get to fully enjoy them? I'm guessing probably not. That would be hell for the shareholders, Scott. Shareholders matter more than anyone else on Earth. Communist. Meanwhile, Brother Usher Steve up in New York says, I'm trying to figure out, between our government and corporate classes who screw and screw and screw and screw us, and this Cinemark story, whether I just throw my arms up and give civilization the bird and a big old you and move to the woods or fight. This is so disgusting, Bob. Honestly, I have no words. Yes, some other shit has gone on with my dealings with New York State. Working people can't ever get justice, let alone a break. I'm 45 and I feel like I've just got no stomach left for any of this. Sorry if I sound the wimp, especially to folks like you in West Virginia who look at this and see nothing new and continue to fight. I just don't have it in me anymore. Ah, you don't have it in you today, Steve. You'll have it in you tomorrow or the day after that. And I know damn good and well you've got it in you to go and fight for others who can't. I know you. Asa notes, To Cinemark's credit, they did offer free lifetime popcorn to the surviving victims before the case proceeded to court. Chevron, meat pizza. I think that was snark. Pretty sure that was snark. It's, we've got the potential to be busy this evening, because there are always thorns to jab into our sides on any given Thursday. Hey, big thanks. Big thanks to Tarani, who has taken our $40 goal down to $20. $40 to, you know, we try to raise $200 every evening. But $40 beats the Swede, and now it's $20. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed. Oh, man, talk about a thorn in the side Thursday. Steve from Georgia Stan letting me know that his beloved wife, Karen's Steve's a shitty government mail Jeep broke down again today. The transmission took a powder. She's at her wit's end. Tell her, Steve, tell Karen, deep breath. Let him go now. Or she could just power swear and scare Cletus back under the bed again. It's entirely up to y'all. Ugh. In the Georgia heat and humidity. Whew. Hey, what else? Do you remember? You remember when we had the government shut down? You know, sequestration and all of that. And lo and behold, because of the government shutdown. That was entirely, you know, not necessary. It was entirely manufactured, largely by, among others, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the booger-eaten, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time. Remember how like the air traffic controllers got furloughed too? And all of a sudden, the Congress critters couldn't get out of Congress, and they couldn't get out of D.C., and they couldn't get on their planes and fly back to their districts, their states, and they had to stay in the D.C. hellscape because of something people in Congress had been allowed to do, because of something that people in Congress had chosen to do. Remember how quickly they fixed that? Oh, my God, this affects us. Point of order, Mr. Speaker. All right. Well, I think we've got another case of that. It was yesterday or the day before when a report came out that showed that, lo and behold, the Cannon House office building, the oldest of the three House office buildings, the symmetrical twin to the Russell Senate office building. It's a beautiful building, Cannon is. Great heavy wooden doors, marble all over the place. It's a gorgeous building. We don't build stuff like that anymore. Unfortunately, when they did build it, they built it with a bunch of lead pipes. And it turns out that tap water, and now I think about all the times that I leaned over a water fountain to get a quick, cool drink inside the Cannon House office building, because we were there quite often. It turns out the tap water in the Cannon House office building is poisonous, you know, with lead. Water testing was done on the drinking water sources in the Cannon House office buildings. Building. It was tested in all the office buildings. But according to the architect of the Capitol, which has the oversight of, well, they're kind of like, the architect of the Capitol is kind of like the position that Brother Deacon Gerald occupies as head of the Building and Grounds Committee there at the Cathedral of Common Sense. Well, they got the report back, and there are more than 15 parts per billion of lead in the water, the drinking water, of the Cannon House office building. And my, doesn't this begin to answer just a whole lot of questions? The architect of the Capitol didn't say how much lead is in the Cannon water. But the architect of the Capitol did note that the water exceeds the EPA action level of 15 parts per billion. So the architect of the Capitol issued a statement saying, although the cause of the increase remains under investigation, in an abundance of caution, all drinking water sources and office-provided water filtration units in the building will be turned off beginning at 10 p.m. Tuesday, June the 28th, 2016. Yeah, so they're bringing in bottled water. You know, just like Flint. Just like some public schools in Portland, Oregon. Just like poisoned cities all over the United States. And it really does, I said poison cities all over the United States. There are 1,110 water systems in the United States that have lead levels greater than 15 parts per billion. In at least 10% of the homes tested. The EPA's violation and enforcement records note that that is a number equivalent to some 3.9 million people. I'm guessing that number is actually low. Now, here's a real laugher for you. Of those 1,110 water systems with lead levels in excess of 15 parts per billion, Flint, Michigan isn't even on the list. Because still, now, even now, right now, as of this minute, state, county, and city officials in Michigan have still not reported formally to the EPA that Flint, Michigan is poisoned by lead in its water. As of 2015, 5,363 water systems in the United States serving 18 million people were found to be in violation of the EPA lead and copper rule. Of those 5,363 water systems, only 459 have reached compliance by the end of 2015. I'll tell you what, that's some sharp, pointy, nasty, razor's edge teeth the EPA has there. I mean, God knows if they had any, if their teeth were any sharper. I mean, oh, dear God. Oh, and you know how I mentioned at the beginning of the story, do you remember the sequester? And I mentioned Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the booger-eating future king of America, and son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time. Well, the reason that Flint has not gotten any relief yet is because they had to pass a bill through the Congress. In particular, the bill has to get through the Senate of the United States. But Jesus's best friend, just ask him, I mean, you know, Ted Cruz, not Jesus, he's not around. Jesus's best friend, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, has stopped the bill that would provide monetary relief to fix or begin to fix, because you can't fix, you can only begin to fix the problems in Flint. And then a right-wing constitutional scholar, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, jumped in. Both of them claiming that Flint has all the government resources they need to fix the problem. That's, quote, all the government resources they need to fix the problem. Because after all, as St. Ronnie of Reagan reminded us, government is the problem. And, you know, in the case of Flint, that's true. Flint wasn't poisoned by Freedom Industries like 300,000 people were in West Virginia. Flint wasn't poisoned by some fracking concern. Flint wasn't poisoned by a coal company or an oil company or a chemical company. Flint was poisoned by a right-wing reactionary Coke bought and paid for Republican government in Michigan that decided it would be cheaper to give poisonous water to the people of Flint than to provide them with clean water. I mean, this is the lead poisoning of America explains so much. I mean, how many nights have we spent on this program wondering why Americans do, especially in political circumstances, the stupid things they do? Flint, lead in water may well explain the Trump phenomenon. I want to know about the water supply in Arlington, Texas. It's Arlington, isn't it? The first congressional district that sends Louis Asparagus Gohmert to Washington every 2 years. How about those people are walking around with babies' arms growing out of their heads? But, no, I mean, Flint's kind of had all the government help they can stand, because it was Rick Snyder and his pet Republican legislature and all the little Republican creatures scurrying around that poisoned Flint. And that was government resources. It's just that Flint needs different government resources, the federal government, and, well, you know, Mike Lee and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, don't want him to have them because they're bastards. But now that they've found out that the water in the House Cannon office building is also poisonous, by God, we're getting some action. Dan Kildee, a Michigan Democrat who happens to represent Flint, wrote in a letter, or made a statement, rather, yesterday. He said, Congress has so far failed to act on Flint aid, and now some members of Congress have had their own water shut off due to high lead levels in their Washington offices. Every American deserves to have access to safe drinking water. America is the richest and most prosperous country in the world. Never mind. And we can afford to provide safe drinking water to our citizens. If one was a member of a government that actually believed in government, that would be true. Congressman Bill Pascrell, Elise Stefanik, Daniel Kildee, Candace Miller, and Frank Pallone signed off on a letter to EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy. They wrote, "As the Environmental Protection Agency completes revisions of the lead and copper rule, we urge you to ensure it reflects the latest science on the incidence and health effects from lead in drinking water and effective notification of elevated levels. We understand the LCR currently requires public water systems to take certain actions to minimize lead and copper contamination in drinking water, i.e. reduce water corrosivity to prevent the leaching of these metals, monitor lead levels at the customer tap, and conduct public education if there is a lead action level exceedance. When other measures are not sufficient for the water system to avoid an action level exceedance of 15 parts per billion in more than 10% of tap water samples collected during any monitoring period, the rule requires water systems to replace lead service lines." One would hope that Gina McCarthy already knew this, but I understand why this goes in the letter, because it was going to be published for people like me to share with you. In 1991, the current lead action level was developed in 1991 based on the practical feasibility at that time of reducing lead through controlling corrosion, corrosion control technologies, and our understanding of the negative impacts of lead at low doses have advanced significantly since that time. Uh-oh, I smell some job-killing regulations coming. In 1991, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention used 10 micrograms per deciliter as a level of concern for blood lead levels in children. However, in 2012, the CDC recognized that parents may not be notified of blood levels below 10 micrograms per deciliter, and so established a reference level for lead representing the 97.5th percentile of blood lead levels in children. CDC will update this reference every 4 years. Currently, it is 5 micrograms per deciliter, and it will hopefully continue to decrease as we remove sources of lead exposure from the environment, including from drinking water contamination. The LCR currently aims to keep lead levels in water below 15 parts per billion at the 90th percentile home. In 2011, the World Health Organization established guidelines of 10 parts per billion for lead on the basis of treatment performance and analytical achievability. The European Union Council, the EU, break it all to pieces! Council Directive on Drinking Water Quality also established 10 parts per billion in its standards for public notification. Therefore, we strongly urge you to bring the current... I wonder if that was one of the things that drove leave voters to fury. I mean, the EU interfering with the ability of people to drink lead-poisoned water. Oh, I'm being snarky. Quit it, Bob. Therefore, we strongly urge you to bring the current rules and action level in line with the most up-to-date scientific research on lead levels and corrosion controls as you finalize revisions to the LCR. While we understand the action level does not represent a health-based standard, it is an important tool for triggering public notification and other actions to reduce the public's exposure to lead drinking water contamination. Major public health officials, federal and state public health agencies, and international public health organizations have long recognized there is, maybe one should bold this or italicize or underline or just shout it. Wait a minute. There is no safe level of lead exposure. All better now. This consensus has formed based on decades of scientific research and public health documents demonstrating that it does not matter if a person breathes in, swallows, or otherwise absorbs lead, there are negative health impacts from lead exposure. Again, see Party, Republican. CF teabaggers. Further, the health effects from exposure to lead are especially of concern for pregnant women, infants, and young children, and often disproportionately impact minority communities and low-income individuals. In fact, the CDC reports that there are at least 4 million households where children reside that are being exposed to high levels of lead. Additionally, the CDC estimates there are approximately 500,000 U.S. children ages 1 through 5 with blood lead levels above 5 micrograms per deciliter, the reference level at which CDC recommends public health actions be initiated. That's sobering. 500,000 U.S. children aged 1 through 5 who are already pretty much, kind of, sort of, really kind of hate to say this, screwed. We urge you to establish a national clearinghouse of information for the public, as recommended in the Lead and Copper Rule Working Group report, drafted by the National Drinking Water Advisory Council. Got water? We believe it is critical that the public at all levels of government are notified when a significant number of tests come back above the LCR's action level. Leadership by the EPA is essential to improving the effectiveness of corrosion control treatments and other actions needed to reduce exposure of lead in drinking water. While we understand this cannot be achieved by EPA regulation alone, we must put strong regulations in place to protect the public's health and ensure that our drinking water is safe. We look forward to working with you in the future as EPA updates and implements the LCR. Thank you for your consideration. In doing our part, we will take out every teabagging Republican member of the House that we can find and beat them with axe handles the next time they talk about the EPA being a job-killing regulatory body. Thank you very kindly. No, I added that last part, but damn, wouldn't it have been nice? Whew. So, don't drink the water. Brother Usher Steve in New York says, I want to pee in Congress's water, a la Hollywood Nights. Oh, I just want to pee on Congress. And I'm sure from time to time, maybe you do, too. Told you it was going to be a busy little thorn in the side Thursday. But here we are at the close of the filibobster. Have a quick peep over to... Oh, nice group in the chat room. Good evening, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Lady Tsuki, Little Gray, MG, Snork, Steve from Georgia Stan, Stockton Larry, and Truth Seeker. Come on by. The water is, well, the water's full of lead, but come on by anyway. What do you say? Jesus God. The greatest country in the history of the universe, in the world today, now, forever. Amen under God. Ain't even worth reaching for the reverb. And we find out that we're actively, but then again, so what? Yeah, we're actively poisoning 500,000 children with lead. Yeah, there's all kinds of people that have lead in their water. Yeah. But if you pay attention, are you honestly, really, candidly surprised? Are you? Because, you know, here in Appalachistan, I gotta tell you, I'm not. And by the way, I'm a little frustrated that Frank Pallone signed that letter, but he's never signed on to the AIC Act. Because, see, we don't just have lead in places in the sacrifice zone in Appalachia. We got cadmium. We got barium. You know, I love it every Easter when they put out those cadmium cream eggs. We got cadmium, barium, arsenic, lead, manganese, magnesium, aluminum. We got polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, sunshine. Yeah, I know. Hoghead in the chat room says, never mind that, Bob. What are the Kardashians up to? Hopefully getting hit by a bus. Oh, I must be in a foul temper or something this evening. Oy. So, well, at least I got a we can only wish out of the chat room, so maybe y'all are as mean or meaner than I am. But what do we just give up? Do we just say, ah, screw it? It's how corporate America works. You can't change the system. Maybe if I go out and vote for Jill Stein, things will all get better. Even though if she lived to be 1,000, she would never be elected president. Ooh, that's going to piss somebody off. I'm sorry. Hey, exactly. Brother Deacon Gerald notes, you know, you can't taste the lead in Appalachistan's water because of all the arsenic and selenium. Well, I mean, they put selenium in vitamins and stuff, Gerald. What are you complaining about? Well, I was going to take a break, but screw that. Let's go to the phones and see what's happening. Maybe then after that we'll take a break. Hey, welcome to the program.
Can you hear me, Bob?
I can hear you quite well, thank you.
This is Richard in Southeastern Tennessee.
Hey, Richard, how are you?
Well, up and down. It's a real change.
Did I hear you say Tennessee?
You did.
My God, were you kidnapped? I mean, did they slip acid to you? I mean, I knew you were going to move, but really? Tennessee? Okay.
Yeah. Well, things worked out. I have a friend who helped me look for a place to live here. And I just got internet service.
Glory!
In the house. So I decided to give you a call.
Well, I appreciate being that high on the list, Richard. I really do. It's good to hear from you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard your program in a long time. I got here at the end of last September, and I'm still not sure I'm going to stay in this house. I'm listening to you on a laptop and talking to you on a cell phone, and my real computer setup is in the office. You know, it's a room that faces west, and the sun is intolerable at this time of day. So,
if you've been there since September, you've begun to experience some intolerable. Yeah.
Oh, you mean the heat? Well, I'm trying to get used to it. I'm not a heat person, but I'm managing to acclimate to some degree. The change is very strange. I mean, I always thought it might be interesting to live away from one of the coasts.
Interesting. Interesting is a nice mild word for it.
Well, I don't know what else to say. You know, I never had the experience. And by the way, is my audio okay?
For the first time in ages, phone call, it'll be fine.
Okay, I didn't know. I thought I'd try the speakerphone, but not yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up in New York City and lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for 43 years, and it just got too ridiculously expensive. My landlord wanted the house back, and it was like jumping into the fire. So I decided to move somewhere where, you know, where it's more affordable. And what I'm finding is that it's not so affordable. Healthcare is a lot more expensive here.
Well, yeah, you're in a Stan state, Richard.
Meaning what?
You're in Tennistan. Just north of Talabama. Just east of Arkansas, just south of Kentucky Stan. you know, so you're going to be kind of screwed for health care.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm finding utilities are surprisingly expensive because they charge access fees. This is a pretty backward place in the sense of how things are priced. For one thing, there's sales tax on everything, including food, which I just don't expect. Do you have sales tax on food in West Virginia?
No, we got rid of it. That's why we have a. That's partly why we have a. We've been dealing with a $250 million budget shortfall with the collapse of the coal industry.
Do you have income tax?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. See, there's no income tax here.
Yeah, I know. So tell me, without getting into too much detail, don't want an address or anything, what part of Tennistan are you in?
Southeastern part of the state, halfway between Knoxville and Chattanooga.
Okay. I know that neck of the woods.
Yeah, were you talking about a place near here that sells smoked pork or smoked hams?
Yeah, that would be Benton's Bacon.
Yeah, I passed there, going to a medical appointment, in fact.
There are balance in all things in the universe, Richard. And Benton's Bacon might balance out some of the other insanity because it's the best bacon on earth.
Well, I don't know. I have a landlord who won't do repairs. He's a lawyer. I don't know if they go together. And I don't know if I'm going to stay in this house, so I sort of partially unpacked, and everything's pretty much a mess.
Have you experienced culture shock?
No, not really. Not really. People are friendly, you know. I'm trying to understand the prejudice or lack of it or something. Something's different. I can't put my finger on it.
Stay there long enough. You'll figure it out.
Well, listen, I got to go because I'm having a medical issue right now, but I will call you back.
Okay, I hope we'll hear from you. I'm glad to know you're back on the air. Chime in anytime, Richard, anytime.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Long-time buddy, Richard, formerly of the Bay Area, and now of Southeast Tennessee. I can't help think that's going to take some getting used to. Big difference between California and Tennistan. Big, big difference. So let's take a little break here. Maybe you've got something on your mind, or we'll do more thorns or what have you. Again, we're trying to beat the Swede. We got $20 to go to do that as we end the month of June. $20 to go. And let's see. We'll also, of course, this being a Thursday, we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So, light it up if you want to. You know the numbers, right? 304-574-8178. Or the stress line, 304-663-4676. That spells horn. 4676. From anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. You're welcome to use that as well. And let's see, @BobKincaid on Twitter. And Facebook, Bob Kincaid. So, yeah, we'll take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
From the sky we look so organized and brave. Walls that make up barricades and graves. Daddy's little empire built by hands and built by slaves. From the sky we look so organized and brave.
It's Thursday, June 30, 2016.
An ambitious and enduring North American climate, clean energy, and environment partnership.
U.S., Canada, and Mexico sign Clean Energy Pact.
Americans take it for granted that the water flowing from their drinking water taps is clean and safe.
New report finds millions of Americans may be exposed to lead in drinking water. Germany bans fracking, plus LED streetlights are keeping the American Medical Association up at night.
Really? All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I think it's across the board known that the EPA has become an out-of-control agency.
Also, is our children learning? This is your Green News Report.
Okay, Desi Doyen, just a quick reminder before we get to the 4th of July holiday. Fingers crossed out here in California, where it remains bone dry, that fireworks don't start a whole new round of wildfires across this state.
Yes, that would be bad.
Yeah, you think? Somehow I feel like our next Green News Report is writing itself already. That said, what do you have for us in today's Green News Report?
Well, first, an estimated 18 million people in the United States are potentially exposed to dangerous lead levels in U.S. drinking water. That's according to a new report from the Natural Resources Defense Council, whose analysis of the Environmental Protection Agency's own records found that more than 5,000 municipal water systems are not in compliance with federal drinking water standards. It's important to note that the report does not say all 18 million people have been exposed to excessive lead. They just say that their water supplies recorded violations. NRDC found the EPA did not act on nearly 90% of those reported cases, which means they're potentially missing problems with inadequate testing or inadequate water treatment measures. According to NRDC's Eric Olson, the report demonstrates the need for a national plan to repair our water systems.
Providing safe drinking water to citizens is a fundamental government service. And, you know, if you're not doing that, you're not doing your job. And unfortunately, what we've found is that unsafe drinking water is a national problem.
And in a telling coincidence, the day after the report's release, a House of Representatives office building in Washington, D.C. had its tap water shut off because of high levels of lead contamination. Meanwhile, in Canada, President Obama has signed a major joint clean energy agreement with Canada and Mexico. At a joint press conference with all three North American leaders, Obama said the partnership would ensure the nations of North America are leaders in the fight against climate change.
We're announcing a new goal across our continents of generating 50% of our electricity with clean power by 2025, which is a bold goal, but is an imminently achievable goal.
That goal of 50% clean energy in 10 years is across the entire continent and would be met in part through new energy efficiency standards and new cross-border electricity transmission lines between the nations. Those will generate hundreds of thousands of jobs and allow Canada, with its abundance of clean hydroelectric power, to export clean electricity to the U.S. and Mexico.
Yeah, it'll also allow tightrope walking illegal immigrants to walk right across those power lines.
Okay, well, maybe so, but exporting clean electricity is far better than Canada exporting its dirty tar sands oil.
Okay, good point.
Big Oil's lobbying group, the American Petroleum Institute, is very not happy about the growing influence of the climate action movement to leave fossil fuels in the ground. In an exclusive report, Politico says that the American Petroleum Institute has now formed an internal task force to rethink their marketing and PR campaigns in order to get their anti-climate science message out there and block any momentum in the next Congress toward a price on carbon emissions.
Oh, we'd hate to see that.
Germany has banned fracking, ending a years-long dispute over the controversial natural gas drilling technique. The Guardian reports that the German legislature passed the fracking ban after the oil and gas industry, tired of waiting for new regulations, announced last week they would push ahead with fracking projects that had been on hold. So the German Assembly banned it altogether.
Oh, Hillary Clinton's not going to be happy.
Finally, a wave of American cities are switching their streetlights to super-efficient LED bulbs. While LEDs are champs at saving money and energy, the American Medical Association now says that the most commonly used bright white LED streetlights are too harsh and can actually interfere with night vision. Plus, the AMA warns the bright lights may be messing with Americans' sleep-wake cycles. So, the AMA says proper design of new technologies is crucial and recommends cities instead opt for LED bulbs with a yellowish color for nighttime street lighting.
Yes, please. That sounds good. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can even look at it at night on your really brightly lit mobile phone. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another owner in the night.
I can almost predict the bumpers. I saw that one coming from a mile away. Hey, thanks very kindly to Carl. Carl has finished off the beating of the Swede. The Swede is beaten. Thank you very, very much indeed, Carl. And got beaten, you know, with a little extra change into the bargain. So there's 16 extra cents of Swede beating going on there. Thanks, everybody. That's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. And I do appreciate the fact that we did something very near resembling the impossible in beating the Swede this month. That was just stunning. Oh my goodness! It's our buddy Snork. Hey Snork.
Hello.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm having a good time.
I can well imagine you are.
I'd call in and rant a little bit about climate issues. And one of the things that we're wasting in our waste is urine. The Norwegians, the Swedes, and the Swiss are so far ahead of us. They actually have got a lot of people using split toilets to collect urine. And urine can be can have its contaminants removed really easy and made into a material called struvite by adding magnesium oxide, and it's a really nasty reaction, and it burns away and kills pretty much everything that could be bad in the water, and you're left with this crystal, and all the fluid remaining that's been sterilized basically drains away, and it can be stored for centuries, and it's really, really good fertilizer for mixing with a little water, and it's almost very close to what you would buy for a really high-priced fertilizer. And they're using it in a lot of greenhouses in Europe right now for the non-food items. And in some European countries, they've actually certified it for being grown for vegetables for sale. And, of course, we just keep flushing it all away. I also wanted to bring up the issue with the jet streams. I don't know if anybody would remember.
Yeah, I've got the story here, and it's.
You want to read that first, and then
just to give people the backgrounder on it. Scientists have declared a global climate emergency because the jet stream. In the dead of summer, has crossed the equator. What they said is, like many extreme events resulting from human-forced climate change, this commingling of upper-level airs from one hemisphere with another's is pretty fracking strange. This, according to Robert Scribler, he said it's the very picture of weather weirding due to climate change, something that would absolutely not happen in a normal world, something that, if it continues, basically threatens seasonal integrity. Now, this just happened, Snork? Do I understand correctly?
Well, a lot of times in nature, there's little barriers that have to be beaten before something can occur. So a lot of times in the past, when the jet streams got too out of whack, there was only so much energy in the air to allow them to try to break through, and they couldn't get over the different pressure ridges that build and kind of shepherd the winds. However, in the last few years, people might have remembered the polar vortexes hitting, and sometimes they've hit really bad. We've had temperatures 50 to 60, 70 degrees below normal in the winter. Now we're going to start seeing this in the summer, where we could suddenly see either as the wind dips down to the south, it could pull a vortex down from the polar region in the summer, and it can
That's what I was wondering, because, I mean, typically we only pay attention to things like the jet stream in the northern hemisphere in the dead of winter, because it's when the jet stream dips way down south in the dead of winter that people where I am wind up freezing our asses off at, 10 below zero, which is awfully damned cold for a place like Appalachia.
And as it gets worse, we could be seeing more extremes. It could also go the other way. In the middle of winter, you could suddenly see a 100-degree day as far north as Chicago.
And, I mean, is there a polar opposite to this? I mean, is there a southern hemisphere jet stream that
yes.
might it's, push it's, upward, as it were? Yeah, relative term, I understand, but you get my meaning.
The whole world is like one of those puzzles where you move one tile and the next thing comes in. You have to move another and another.
Yeah, so I usually wind up throwing those in the garbage because they make me very angry.
And that's what's going to happen here. When polar vortex comes down to us in the wintertime and brings us extremely cold air, it brings unnaturally warm air into Siberia. Same thing's happening down in the bottom of the continent. It's not good. The fact that we are on a rotating body, depending on where it's at on the planet, when there's a movement, the actual result is 90 degrees out of phase. So a wind coming up off of the center of the Atlantic could actually bring a hot breeze up through the west coast of South America and North America. And it's confusing and difficult to model. The fact that they were allowed time to actually do that extreme of model were pretty fantastic. But the main excursion that they showed was from it coming right up across Central America. And I can't think of a worse place for it to go.
No, I get your meaning in that regard. So this isn't a situation, Snork, like something where, you know, El Nino or La Nina would cause it or something. This really is, this is.
We've lost.
Heretofore unknown?
Yeah, we've lost the ability to predict at this point. And as small as my knowledge is in that area, I really couldn't make any other thing. But I do know we're off the books now. And, so weather abilities, I would say at all times of the year, don't pack all your.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, Snork, because I've been saying for a while, just based on what I've observed, you know, just here in my own space, what I've been saying is that the seasons are out of whack. Last Christmas, for instance, it was weird. There was this strange fog all over the place here, and it was something approaching 78 degrees,
mm-hmm.
if I recall correctly. I mean, I was out in a t-shirt and shorts on Christmas Day. And granted, yeah. You know, you can at those margins of the seasons. And I would suspect this is where we're going to see some of it, whatever it is that we're going to see. At the margins of the seasons, you know, winter can act like fall. Fall can act like summer. Summer can act like spring. And spring can damned well act like the dead of winter. I can't tell you the number of late March and early April snows I've lived through here.
Yeah.
It's become consistently bizarre. Does that make sense?
And, yes, it has. And now with this new, I don't even think they've settled on a name for it yet, trans-equatorial vortex intrusion, probably. It wouldn't be vortex. We're not at a pole. But anyway.
What does it do if we know, Snork? What does it do we just had, for all intents and purposes, just barely short of a hurricane in the middle of a landlocked state.
Yes, the same thing's been happening up here. Our blizzards in the winter are actually beyond hurricane force, unheard of before. We were having summer storms last year with storms reaching altitudes of 70,000 feet. And if you take that in terms of miles, that is... over 15 mile high storms.
That's astonishing. And what is this, if I could go ahead and ask, what does this mean for the further melting of the poles?
I have no way of knowing that one. It doesn't bode well to have that much mixing. It might be. No, I can't see anything good coming out of it.
I mean, when something like the jet stream goes that far south into very otherwise humid zones, does it pull the water, the atmospheric water back with it?
Yes.
When it pops back up.
Well, as the jet stream goes around, it lowers the pressure that's underneath it, and basically causes weather systems to move in. So and it never goes straight. It's always going in waves. So you could have one day getting an extreme burst of polar air, and 3 days later you get an extreme burst of a tropical air. And of course, any time that polar air follows tropical air, you're going to have precipitation and large storms.
Well, it's. I guess it's all wait and see at this point, isn't it? But if this mm-hmm. if this becomes a permanent fixation, is this an accelerator of climate disaster?
Yes, because it increases the distribution. What used to be just at the poles, or in problems that were occurring only at the equator, now are going to be mixing their problems together.
I mean, is there an upside? Does it slow Jesus down a little bit from destroying churches and destroying his people's churches in the South and out in the Southwest?
Not a good time to be living in valleys. It doesn't bode well for India at all.
Well, I was about that was my next question. What happens to the monsoon? Because as foreign as the monsoon seems to us, it is a regular seasonal occurrence that drives the ability to do things like grow food, right?
I don't think they've had one for a couple of years. I'm not sure. There's an incredible drought in the middle of India. They're taking train loads of water in, but they're running out of places to fill the trains. So many people are climbing on the tank cars and the trains that they can hardly move to pull away when they try to get out of the area. There's going to be over 100 million people that need to find a new place to live pretty quick, because if it continues, they're not going to be able to go back.
And so that would mean, unless they just, as the saying goes, up and die.
People have a wonderful ability to flee. Even if a half of them moved, we're still looking at twice the refugee crisis that Europe is experiencing right now.
And as I have pointed out anthropologically, one of the defining traits of humanity is its willingness to get up and move and go somewhere so as to try not to die when wherever humanity is, that things have gotten so awful that the dying is going on, it takes place. So mm-hmm. we can't expect people who are victims of climate change, and to a large extent that means victims of the Western obsession with the burning of hydrocarbon fuels, we can't expect them just to sit there and quietly go about the business of shuffling off this mortal coil, can we?
No. We also have a terrible habit of realizing it too late and not being able to take action in time. We've seen massive drought in Africa before, and the period of time that we took action would be when we could drop them a little bit of overaged rice, not when we could have still saved their farms or anything. And that's what's happening in India. They're losing their farms. And we're losing our farms in California, too. I read that half of the migrant workers in the West Coast United States have decided to no longer go to California.
That's only moderately terrifying.
Mm-hmm. But California tends to be our fall and or winter and spring food supply for the United States.
Well, sure. I mean, it's described as a classic Mediterranean climate, which is kind of different from the typical winter, spring, summer, fall, you know, four seasons climate that you would get in, say, the middle of the country. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember eating fresh fruit, you know, just off the dadgum tree in January in the Bay Area. And you know, that's a little kind of unheard of anywhere else, you know, short of maybe Florida. But we get our, you know, we get our juicing oranges from Florida. We get our eating oranges from what, California and Texas?
For now, I believe that Florida is losing its citrus crop quite quickly. Not so much from the drought, but from a fungus that is accompanying the climate change.
Yeah, it's, disease. And then there, I remember a discussion we had some years back about the fact that, you know, my great-grandchildren may not know what a banana is, whether it's appropriately
yes.
curved or not.
The current banana species will be gone in 5 years.
Wait, five?
We're not eating the one that you ate as a child either. That one's been extinct for about 19 years, for 20 years.
Why didn't anybody tell me this? I mean, I pay attention to a lot of stuff, Snort.
Yeah, banana cultivars, these different subspecies of banana. We're on our third one right now, and basically what happens is they come down, and when they get this fungus, they pretty much have to burn the crops. And right now there's banana restrictions in a lot of countries, where they don't want people coming from other countries that have had this banana rust, for especially the countries that are desperate for supplying bananas. There are some companies that's one of their major exports, and they're quickly losing it.
Oh, one of my favorite little guilty pleasures in the world now is peanut, not just now but for ages, you know, peanut butter and banana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me and Elvis, it goes magnificently together. But you're telling me that's going bye bye.
Yeah, Panama disease, TR4, used to be. I'm trying to think. Gros Michel was the type of banana that we had as a kid back in the 60s and 70s. We've lost them to disease, and the banana companies quickly switched in the Cavendish, which looks like it and almost tastes like it, and it's not as strong as the original Gros Michel, which basically just a few wealthy people in England can get now that have them in their own inside gardens.
What about the little short organic bananas that I see in my grocery store, the little red ones and little stubby, you know?
Oh, are those plantains?
No. Plantains are freaking huge. No, these are like little red, stubby, organic red bananas, you know, courtesy of Del Monte or whoever. But they're organic bananas, but they're about, maybe 5 inches long. Maybe, mm-hmm. you know, like a quarter, the size of a quarter, around.
Being a different variety of them, they might be more able to survive. Right now, the Fusarium fungus itself actually has grown to really be able to home in and really kill a banana plant fast. As we change our humidity and temperatures, even as the jet streams vary over an area, they can change the air pressure. Someone that is sitting at sea level, if they get an extremely hot day that's extremely humid, it can be the same thing as going up 5 to 10,000 feet in altitude, and you could put somebody that's got a breathing or a heart issue at in a crisis just with extremely hot, humid air.
Oh, with it, I have no doubt of that whatsoever. So, with like the jet stream stuff that you're talking about, there's really nowhere on the planet that's safe, is there?
No.
I mean, it's not like this is going to create the greening of the Altiplano, is it?
Who knows what the ultimate will be? It's just one more thing for us to know that we have to adapt and live with, or ignore and die.
Well, I mean, I think even the deniers make the argument, well, you know, whatever happens, we'll adapt to it. I mean, well, hell, I mean, if Kansas turns into a desert, we'll just start growing all the corn and wheat in Saskatchewan.
Yeah. And Saskatchewan is, there's problems that are coming south from Canada as well.
Well, that's the whole point of all of this. I mean, what happens? I mean, if it's dipping this far at the summer solstice, what if it just sucks itself right back up to the and camps out, you know, right on the on the North Pole during the winter? I guess we all just have balmy, wet winters now.
Yeah, it wouldn't stay long at the North Pole. a few days, and we'd see some type of movement. Just because the Earth's spinning, things will always be weird. When you mess things up, going up perpendicular to the motion of the Earth, that's when things get really strange.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at a YouTube link right now. I won't bother to play it, but Paul Beckwith of the University of Ottawa said that the jet stream behavior by itself will signal massive hits to the food supply and massive geopolitical unrest.
Yeah. Well, what happens if China hits the drought, if it extends from India across the Himalayas to even western China? We're talking about...
Well, I mean, that's the question I was trying to raise the other night while all the Sturm und Drang was transpiring about the Brexit vote. Can any country on this planet, given the current population of said planet, reasonably expect to feed itself? I mean, like I said, going back 12 years, I remember a story talking about 52% or something, 53% of American food coming from abroad. Now, mm-hmm. We used to take pride, the United States used to take pride in feeding the world.
We're already taking a significant portion of our food from Argentina.
Oh, I have, and that's the question I'm asking. And yeah. I have a feeling that this is the kind of thing, Snork, that causes, you know, the guys with all the jewelry on the shoulder boards at the Pentagon to lose sleep at night.
Yes, we've lost our fisheries. North of California all the way to Japan, we've got severe fishery loss. In the mid-Atlantic, we've got severe fish lost in the Indian Ocean. So the ocean has been a long time a major food supply. Between impact to that, California and Argentina, if we start seeing hits... in the any hit in the Midwest at all.
Well, I've seen time after time the reference to the fact that if we shifted away from a meat based diet, and you know, I play and I have my fun and we have our food porn moments and everything, and I'm a meat eater, but I also recognize reality that if we shifted away from a meat based diet and took into consideration the amount of water and grain and resources generally consumed by meat animals, that we could feed the world, you know, once over plus?
Probably not. That type of agriculture requires us to basically be using what we consider our farmable areas now. But as we push north, we're going to be getting to very hilly land that can't be farmed. Just like it's not going to be flat like Iowa, it's not going to be flat like Illinois. We might have to reconsider the fact that meat doesn't have to be on flat ground. So instead of growing grain for it, if it was forage fed, it can be on pretty nasty terrain that's not valid for housing or anything. And that's what a lot of the teabaggers out west do. They let their cattle loose and go out in the hilly areas, they actually eat in areas that a lot of times would not be farmable.
Well, so, I think oftentimes I look at my own and you know, God knows I have my love-hate relationship, or you know, conflicted relationship, to say the very least, with the place that I live.
Mm-hmm.
But I have, you know, these are not frozen peaks where there's a tree line and above it's just, you know, rock and scree and whatever. These are rounded, worn down hills in a temperate rainforest, and I can't help but look at these hills and then I think about the terraced farming slopes of the indigenous peoples of the Andes.
And they took a long time to do that. And they had other practices that we would find disgusting. Let's look at the terraces that have been done in Southeast Asia for thousands of years. They learned quite early that if they just harvested from them, that pretty soon they couldn't harvest anymore. And they made them sustainable. They dumped their waste into the farm, refertilized. That's how they fertilize the those terraces. Every drop of water is used, starting from the top terrace, filters down, and basically leaks to the next terrace. So it's ecologic judo, just total proper use of energy, terrorist foods, and we're so wasteful that we just look for the next flat forest to mow down, and have done nothing for that style of growing. But back to the meat versus agriculture of laying down crops in rows. Row crops might not be as feasible in the future, and we might have to use forage animals to actually get food, because that is a very efficient way of getting food, sending out forage animals. So there might be a hope for us meat eaters yet. That doesn't mean that it has to be cattle. Sometimes the smaller animals. Foraging pig might be appropriate. Foraging squirrels might be appropriate.
Well, I mean, there has... Oh, we had Gerald and I had a conversation about squirrels the other night. You don't want to be in the woods on the first day of squirrel season. You're going to get six shot rained on you if you don't get it directly in the back.
The British, World War II, have you ever seen the Thomas Dolby video, Blinded Me with Science?
Oh, of course.
That was a real scientist, and what his job was in World War II was to get a food supply ready in case there was a total blockade and the Americans were unable to get food to the Great Britain. So he was building up a system to basically farm rats, because just as I mentioned, they could forage anywhere for all kinds of food, and they could get the meat back to the people because they felt they needed all kinds of protein. And
rat, so it, yum.
Well, they were pretty desperate in World War II. They were ready for
Desperate. Let's talk desperate. Let's talk Stalingrad.
Yeah. Yeah, you could bet no squirrel would have survived Stalingrad.
But you know, I've got a scientist friend who spent some time consulting in China, not that long back, and he told me that as a result of the Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward, the starvation that accompanied that, he said he never saw an animal bigger than a songbird,
mm-hmm.
because they'd mostly been eaten.
Yeah, I have a friend from China that pretty much had the same story.
And you know, there's a bit of a warning there. I mean, I remember being quite disturbed a few years back when China came over here and bought Smithfield meats. Now, I don't know. Yeah, sure, you see Smithfield products where you are.
Yeah, I can't remember the name that you come up here. I think they're called Farmland here.
Well, I mean, Smithfield is a company that owns
a jillion
different brands now.
Yeah,
and you know, it is wholly owned by the Chinese now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is not the part of the program. There is never a part of the program where I go off on my Trumpish rant. But you know, they didn't buy Smithfield Meats because they expected a big uptick in pork belly futures. They bought Smithfield Meats because there are a couple of billion people who have a real taste, you know, for good pork. Or even, you know, factory farmed pork.
Well, they don't even care that the part that we eat, the China, will take the rest. So they could make a profit on what they sell us and still bring back what they have, and still, it would still sell well in their market.
Yeah, I mean, no, there's lots of what Anthony Bourdain refers to as the nasty bits that we largely turn our snouts up at, but from trotter to tail to snout, there's just not a lot of a pig you can't eat. And no. I'm driving the vegetarians. We are driving the vegetarians and the vegans absolutely mad right now. And I'm not making fun, but you know, they just hear about meat and they go, "Oh, yuck!"
Yeah.
By the way, you got a little fan mail coming in from GK. He says, "I sure wish Snork would call more often than he does. He's both informative and alarming at the same time. You can tell him that I've discovered a cornucopia of free food in my own yard in the way of weeds. There are just so many that can be eaten and offer huge health benefits. Just do your research. It was once said that a weed is a flower out of place." And of course, yeah, we've been eating dandelion and poke greens here in Appalachia for generation upon generation. And you know, we go hog wild in the, well, there's those hogs again. We go hog wild in the early spring for our ramps. Nothing like them.
Yeah, and don't be surprised if capybaras don't become a popular meat.
Yep, giant guinea pigs.
They're just extremely efficient eaters, and they're as big as pigs.
And have been a food source in South America for, you know, tens of thousands of years.
In South America, they eat the bones.
Well, you probably, what, roast them, or?
I don't know. I just knew somebody from down there that said they just start eating the whole thing. They don't pick the meat off.
Wow. Wow. So, you, like me, are a bit of a little ray of sunshine this evening. But with what you started with, you reminded me of the old story of Vespasian, you know, the Roman emperor, who imposed a urine tax on the people of Rome. They saved because they derived chemicals from it that was used in like the tanning industry and the bleaching industry and whatever, laundry, what have you, and according to Suetonius, Titus looked at Vespasian, his daddy, one day and said, you know, this tax that we've got is just disgusting. And Vespasian reached in the sinus of his toga and pulled out, a sesterce or whatever, and sniffed at it and looked at it and handed it to Titus and said, pecunia non olet, money doesn't stink. and in other words, you know, who cares where it's coming from? It's running the empire. And so, there is a tradition in history of making use of all of these things. It's just that somewhere along the way, a great big corporation has probably come up with a chemical that is derived from hydrocarbons that we can use instead, and done along the way its part in damaging the ability of this planet to support human life. Yay us, right?
Yes. And we've got more really severe weather systems moving into the United States in just the next few days. And I think there'll be nothing but news. We're talking around St. Louis, expecting rains above 6 inches per day.
That's not going to be good for things like the, you know, dikes, earthen dams, levees, what have you.
No, and that system's set up to move into West Virginia.
Oh, great. More rain.
A lot could change in 5 days, but, we're completely unpredictable at this time.
Well, we're not particularly inclined to view rain favorably right now. And in many ways, just based on the way that storm system behaved, well, we dodged one in a big way. You know, they were opening the spillways at Summersville Dam, which is an earthen dam, but considerably better constructed than any of the sludge dams in southern West Virginia. They opened the spillways to relieve pressure on that dam. Boats and recreational activities are still banned on Summersville Lake. It's as high as I've ever seen it. Had the rain been located a little bit, maybe south and west, there's every possibility that one or two or three or God knows of the sludge dams that the bankrupt coal company supposedly maintains could have been overtopped, and the day that happens is a day of hell yawning wide open in a place like this, Snork.
Mm.
And, you know, again, that ain't just, you know, floodwaters are bad enough. Most people who have never lived through a flood don't know how dangerous floodwaters themselves can be. But this wouldn't just be floodwaters. This is toxic waste. This is coal cleaning chemicals and coal itself and toxified clay and, you know, just a sludgy goo. And the engineering report says that the wall of it going down the Coal River Valley will be something like 40 to 60 feet high. And there are no 40 to 60 foot high buildings
Mm-mm.
along that route. That means everything and everybody, you know? Because the hills are pretty much straight up and down, the ones that haven't been blasted all to be Jesus. So it's going to, you know, higher ground, forget it. And you're telling me more's on the way.
Yeah. So, well, I've got an appointment coming up. Thanks for letting me rant.
Oh, it's absolutely, absolutely my pleasure, Snork. Like GK, I always look forward to your calls, and I always get some food for thought out of the process.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Snork. And Snork thinks about things that many of the rest of us just don't. And along the way, he manages to point out, you know, there are solutions, but they're solutions that maybe, I don't know, capitalism just isn't interested in? Or that maybe capitalism is put off by or hasn't figured out a proper accounting model down to the 23rd decimal place whereby they can make monumental profits? I don't know. I don't know. So the lines are open if you want to get into the conversation. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. From anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you've never sent me a contact request, do so, and I will happily add you to the conversation. Thank you, Will in Chicago, for keeping fundraising going this evening. The Swede is beaten, and a little bit more along the way. Thank you very, very much indeed. Oh, let's see. Thorn in the side. Where to go? Because there's so many opportunities. Sorry, sneeze impending. You don't want to hear that. Yeah, well, I guess that one's not going to happen. Oh, goodness. Okay, we were talking about some legal stuff earlier. This is one of those. You just beat all, you know that? You just beat all. This is one of those. Stories ripped from the headlines of a small town southern court. The story comes out of the Rome, Georgia News Tribune. Somehow or another, we can't escape Rome in these conversations, can we? It's the story of a fella by the name, and he's not a nice guy, okay? Not even close. The story of a guy named Denver Fenton Allen. Denver Fenton Allen was already incarcerated. He was hailed into court. He's 31 years old. He was hailed into court on charges that he beat Stephen Rudolph Nally to death while both of them were incarcerated in the Floyd County, Georgia jail. All right. And I guess he just felt like he didn't have anything to lose. And look, if you run for or are appointed to, depending on the way your court is structured, Steve from Georgistan notes, I've been there, Bob. Rome or Floyd County? Yeah, okay. Or hopefully not the jail. But if you accept the job of sitting in judgment of common suffering, insufferable sometimes humanity, and you're going to pass sentences on them and deny them probation, admit them to bail, you know, what have you. Okay, thank you, Steve. I'm glad to know. Just visiting. That's that little square outside the corner on the Monopoly board. You've got to have a certain temperament to be a judge like that. You can't let people get under your skin. You should ideally be downright Vulcan in your approach to such things. Because, you know, the opposing lawyers will try to gain some advantage, or they'll try to, you know, they'll try to ingratiate themselves with the jury, that kind of thing. It all went sideways for Judge Bryant Durham Jr. One day recently there in the circuit court when Denver Fenton Allen was brought in. Denver Fenton Allen, I guess, was operating on the theory that a good offense is the best defense. That, or maybe Denver Fenton Allen is just a great, big, honking, giant, humongous asshole. You be the judge. Ah, see what I did there? It's a story about a judge. And they say this isn't professional radio. So, you know, the bail, oh, yay. Now comes the case of the people of the state of Georgia stand versus Denver Fenton Allen on a charge of murder. And some of this stuff is fairly routine. First thing you got to establish as a judge is that you got the right guy in front of you. Are you Denver Fenton Allen? And this is one of the shortcomings of radio. You have to, or maybe it's a bonus or an advantage. You get to use your imagination. But I can tell you that I'm looking at a picture of Denver Fenton Allen, and I'll tell you that I could easily, had I but the technology, transport him into, say, a group of meth gobblers anywhere in Appalachistan, and he would be right at home. So we get past, are you Denver Fenton Allen? And Denver Fenton Allen decides that he wants a different public defender. And you don't just, you know, you don't just get to do that. And this thing went pear-shaped, as the saying goes, in a straight-up hurry. When this went on for 11 minutes, about a week and a half ago, maybe closer to 2 weeks, this exchange did. When the judge didn't immediately accede to Denver Fenton Allen's demand that he have a new public defender appointed, Denver Fenton Allen looked at the Right Honorable Judge Bryant Durham Jr. and said, you know what, Judge? I'm going to murder your whole family, and I'm going to cut your children up into little pieces. I'll knock their brains out with a fucking hammer and feed them to you. The babies will be going, Daddy, Daddy, help me. You okay? At that point, Judge Bryant Durham Jr. responds, well, that's too bad for you because I don't have any children. At which point, Denver Fenton Allen replies, that's all right. I'll do the same thing to your nieces, your nephews, and your sisters. To which Judge Bryant Durham Jr. responded, well, I don't have any sisters or nieces or nephews either. And if you don't knock it off, I'm going to put you in jail. If you don't knock it off, I'm going to put you in jail so long you won't have a chance. To which, in classic redneck form, Denver Fenton Allen responded, "Fuck you." And he said, "Well, okay, that's another 10 days for contempt of court." "Fuck you," 20. "Fuck you," 30. This went on for a while. By the way, Denver Fenton Allen, by way of providing something resembling an excuse for why he wanted a different public defender, said that his public defender asked him to provide oral sex to him in exchange for his defense. At which point Denver Fenton Allen looked at the Honorable Judge Bryant Durham Jr. and said, "And you know what? You can blow me too." And Judge Durham said, "This is going to be an interesting trial." "You okay?" Denver Fenton Allen responds by saying, "Damn right it is, because I'm going to introduce my big old donkey dick as evidence." And then everything went off the rails. Because you already thought everything was off the rails, didn't you? This is where we find out that Judge Bryant Durham Jr. Does not have the judicial temperament to occupy the bench and sit in judgment of people on behalf of the good people of the state of Georgistan. Oopsie. Because somewhere shortly after the "I'll introduce my big old donkey dick into evidence" line, Judge Durham Jr., Bryant Durham Jr., said, he said, "You know, I've had sex with little boys," the defendant said. The judge said, "Well, I got to tell you, I'm not surprised." And continued, "Course, you know," and now this is a judge. I'm wondering if some of the lawyering contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation are listening, because this is the kind of thing that can occasionally, even in a place like Georgistan, cost you your robe. Because when the defendant, Denver Fenton Allen, said that he had had sex with little boys, and Judge Bryant Durham Jr. said he wasn't surprised, he followed up, the judge did, by saying, "Oh, of course you have. You know, you look like a queer." At which point, Denver Fenton Allen has pretty much won. Because Denver Fenton Allen then said, "You calling me a queer in the courtroom?" And this now devolves into a battle of semantics in a rather gutter level. And Judge Bryant Durham Jr. said, "I didn't call you one. I said you looked like one. You know, you are kind of cute. I'll bet the other folks you in the jail with just love you to death." Somehow, I don't remember Fred Gwynn handling things this way and My Cousin Vinny. "Yeah, I bet they love you to death." And I don't know. I guess something just snapped in Judge Bryant Durham Jr.'s mind, because he said, I bet everybody there enjoys fucking your ass. At which point, Denver Fenton Allen said, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to beat off right here in a courtroom. And Judge Bryant Durham Jr. said, I dare you. Now, see, this is what happens when white Southern masculinity gets out of control. I'll take it out. I dare you to. And it all came to a merciful end when Denver Fenton Allen said, or referred to him as Judge Fuckman, and Judge Bryant Durham Jr. said, you know, you're stupid. As a parting shot, Judge Durham said, I've enjoyed this. I hope you have. I know everybody else in the courtroom has enjoyed it, but you can go now. You know when the time to do that was, Your Honor? Back before you got yourself involved in airing a little bit of your native homophobia. Oh, this is a real story. Rome, Georgia, Floyd County, Georgia, Denver Fenton Allen, Judge Bryant Durham Jr. You look like a queer to me. Ay, ay, ay. But, you know, one hopes that this is sort of a one-off. But this kind of thing happens all over the country about every day. But when the judge lets go of his composure, it's the judge who winds up getting busted. And you know what? Denver Fenton Allen is going to put the judge's pelt on his cell wall. Somebody else is gonna host the trial, is going to preside over the trial of Denver Fenton Allen, who will probably engage in this same sort of game. It seems to be, you know, his thing. How did I know this was going to happen? Oh, my. Hey, Tracy.
Hey.
How are you?
Well, I was just listening to about what you were talking about with Denver. Wait. What is it about the three names? I mean, is it a Southern thing, or is it just you have to do all three names when you...
Well, I don't want to run the risk of slandering any other Denver Allens, so I figure I better get all three names in there. Because it's not just every Denver Allen that sashays into court and offers to whoop it out.
Right. I mean, I got to give the man, you know, props for having balls, man, because it's like, that is a major contempt of court. But I guess he figured, why not? He was already in jail when he killed the guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's going. He got time on his hands, Tracy.
You know, that was probably the highlight of, you know, his last decade or so.
Oh, they'll be talking about this in Rome, Georgia, around the Thanksgiving table 75 years from now.
Right, exactly. You know, it's those things where it's like, well, you know what? If I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna go out with a bang. I want people to know who I am and what I did. But it's like
blaze of glory.
When I listen to some of the stories that you tell, it just I shudder at the, you know, your description of him, meth head, and that look, that gaunt look with the, you know, the rotten teeth and this greasy stringy hair and the smell that emulates from their pores that smells like battery acid. Yeah, like that, huh?
And into the bargain, he was a ginger.
Oh, that just doesn't, that doesn't bode well at all, does it?
And he's got those wide open He's got, I call him those wide open Aurora eyes. He's got those wide open eyes like James Holmes did in Aurora.
Right.
Only thing is, this guy only killed one person.
Right. Right. You know, that look of, like, you know, that permanent, not deer caught in headlights, but that look like, you know, that you, like somebody.
Oh, no. This is the Carol Burnett as Nora Desmond. I'm ready for my close-up Max look.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. That is absolutely. Indeed.
But the thing is, it's the judge's conduct that, you know, the judge could have done.
And you're going back and forth with this asshole.
Well, right. And the judge could have done anything up to and maybe including sentencing him to a chain gang or maybe just having him hung on the spot. But then he hauled out, "You look like a queer to me." Oh!
Wait, who said the queer that you look like a queer? The judge?
The judge said that to the dude.
Dude, the what? Okay, see. It's like, you know, was he taking a line from my Officer of Gentleman with?
No, we didn't get to the steers and queers part. But yeah, I'll bet the boys in the jail sure do enjoy, just love you.
You sure do got a purry little mouth.
Ding 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 ding.
Ding ding ding.
Yeah, let's remember. Deliverance was not shot in West Virginia; it was shot in Georgia.
See, well, there you go. Perfect. Yeah. Absolutely perfect. So I don't know how there's people that you don't hear from for a while, and then you post something on your Facebook page. So the last time somebody went off on me about on my Facebook page, this was this guy that we were friends in high school. So I guess a week or so, he went off because I posted that, you know, for the last 8 years, our first family has been, you know, scandal free. Scandal meaning, you know, kids not, you know, being drunk and practically
everybody in the cabinet getting indicted like the Reagan administration.
Right. Stuff like that, you know. And, of course, you know, one of my right-wing friends, well, he's not even a friend, he's like, "You must be out of your mind," and, you know, just denigrating me about, "Don't you pay, you Democrats don't pay attention, you know, what about
Benghazi?"
I'm like, okay, that wasn't him. He had nothing to do with Benghazi. And by the way, according to him, Obamacare is a scandal. I said, what dictionary are you using for the definition of scandal? Okay. I mean, so that was that. And then, so today or yesterday, I don't know when he posted it. What did I post? Oh, somebody did a meme on, and did a direct comparison between Donald Trump and Hitler and all the things, you know.
I have to interrupt. 8:23 p.m. I am told that Thomas over at FYI Nation had 8:23 in the Hitler pool this evening. Go ahead, Tracy.
I forgot about the Hitler pool. What is the Hitler pool? Is it just, you know, whoever says Hitler first or whatever?
It's like the duck dropping down in the old Groucho Marx show. Whoever mentions him, you know, there's a pool and they are honored for the evening.
Ah, I got you. So he's like, "How can you Democrats, blah blah blah? How can you even compare?" And I'm gonna say Hitler to Trump again. And I didn't even bother to answer because I'm like, I'm tired as hot, and I don't, you know, and I get really sick and tired of people going off of me on my Facebook page, because again, a Facebook page is not democracy.
Oh no, okay? You can engage in censorship quite freely.
Right. And so, but what tickles me is that whoever did the meme is using fact. It's not like you're making shit up. He does want Muslims to have, you know, special IDs. He's using racism, and he's blaming, you know, immigrants for the problems of the United States onward and upward. Same thing that, you know, the guy with the little funny mustache did in Germany back in the day.
Yeah, pick out a relatively defenseless ethnic group and scapegoat them for every problem the country has.
Right. And so I'm just really tired of people. You know, again, it's like, look, whatever you feel, if you want to vote for Trump, God bless you. Go with God, you know. And I'm not going to say anything to you. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to question why you're voting for Trump, because if you're voting for Trump, then there's no point in me having a conversation with you.
Well, there is that.
Because, if you've reached the point in your life that you feel that the best person, I mean, you know, we're not on that bill with Hillary, but it is what it is. But, you know, talk about the lesser of two evils. I would take McCain at this point over Trump. I wouldn't take Mittens, though.
Well, but how about Godzilla from Wasilla?
Don't you set her. No. See, even I, you know, that's the thing.
That's the question. That's the question I can't get a straight answer from the Hillarians, is whether or not they were voting for Sarah Palin because she was a woman on the ticket back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't stand. I hate demographic politics.
Yes.
Now, granted, it's up until 2008, it's been, with the exception of Jesse Jackson's campaign, during which Bill Clinton behaved abominably, by the way.
He was a little bitch.
It's always been this white guy versus that white guy.
Right. Well, don't forget about Shirley Chisholm.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, she didn't have a fighting chance.
No, she didn't, but she was fucking awesome.
Yeah, she was.
She would have made a hell of a president.
But, I grow weary of it. Voting for a chromosome? Nah, no thanks.
You know, I, you know, it's like when people got on me about, you know, oh, the only reason why you're voting for Barack Obama is because he's black. I'm like, and what if I am? It's the first time I've had a chance to do it. I said, that's not why I'm voting for him.
Yeah, but see, so you voted for all those white guys just because they were white, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, let's, because, yeah, then I go, well, what about all those races when there was a better, you know, there was a white guy and a black guy, and, you know, maybe local races or, you know, state races or what have you. And even if the black guy was a hell of a lot more qualified than the white guy, you're going to vote for the white guy, regardless, because why? He's white. You know, so I have, so like, I'm like, I'm just turning about a fair play, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, speaking of all of this, I got some fun for you this evening.
Ooh, I like fun.
Okay, it's not fun. This is the Make Tracy Scream portion of the program.
Okay, I'm parked, so go ahead.
Okay, we're good. I don't want to lose signal or anything, so I'm glad you're parked. When you and I were talking on Wednesday.
Was it Wednesday or Tuesday?
It was Wednesday.
Because
was it Tuesday? Okay.
Today's Thursday, so it was Tuesday. Don't
okay, yeah, that's right. That's right. It was Tuesday. I'm on drugs.
Okay, that's okay. Are they good ones?
Sadly, no.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, ibuprofen. But it's a really bright orange ibuprofen, so, you know, there's that.
Ooh.
Orange sunshine ibuprofen. So there's this fabulous blonde wingnut broadcaster who got a job with Glenn Beck. And her name is Tommy Lahren. Lahren. Of course, she's Tomi. Tommy Lahren. Mm-hmm. And she's all aggrieved over, because you mentioned him on Tuesday, Jesse Williams, and what he said at the BET Awards.
Right.
And she feels like, you know, because privilege, she's being discriminated against. She, bleached blonde, white.
Excuse me, what?
Tommy Lahren. She's a victim. She is a victim of discrimination.
She's a victim.
Yeah, absolutely. Now this is the same woman, and I think we had the clip earlier in the year. It was after the Super Bowl performance, and she got all aggrieved at Beyonce. And said that Beyonce was being unfair to young white girls.
Why?
So now we've got this, and because it's your job when you call in to speak for every person of color in the United States.
Well, I can't speak for Jesse and Beyonce because they light skinned it. So that's a whole different.
Oh, light skinned it. Okay. Yeah. Right. I give you here, Tracy, for your enjoyment.
For my enjoyment and entertainment. Okay.
Absolutely. Tommy Lauren.
Okay.
Oh, she got some cool music.
Welcome back for Final Thoughts. And here it goes again. I call out a race bait and I'm Black Twitter public enemy number one. Oh, bring it on. You're proving my point with every misspelled tweet and every stupid emoji you post on my Instagram. Half white Jesse Williams stands up at the BET Awards and bashes white people for being white, and yet I'm the racist? Okay, sure. So if he's half white, is he then half racist? Ponder that. See, I'm not pressed or angry that black people getting woke. I'm all for it. But you're telling me it takes a stupid BET award speech or a Super Bowl performance by entertainers to empower you? And what exactly are you being woke to do? That's what I don't get. Please tell me in what way black Americans are not equal. I'm waiting.
You want to take that one, Tracy?
What way black Americans are not are what?
Yeah, please explain to me in what way black Americans are not equal. She said, I'll wait.
I'll give you the perfect example. You know, I drive Will around. Him and my nieces are, I'm sitting waiting for them. They're doing miniature golf. So a little while ago, Will and I were walking, and he said something. He was, and this is those things where it's definitely a teaching moment. And he said to me, because it was like he had a history class, and he's like, what was the problem with slavery? They got fed, didn't they? So I said, Well,
there's that. And there's always the, they brought, the slavers brought them Christianity so they could go to heaven.
Right. So they can go to heaven. They were really happy with Islam. So they didn't really care about heaven, Jesus. But I said, okay, first of all, that's wildly inappropriate and offensive. And I said, but fortunately, you're saying it to me and not another black person, because if you did, you would be dead right now. And so I went on to the horrors of slavery and made a mental note that we're going to have a showing, a viewing of 12 Years a Slave. And so I said, you know, because, you know, he's autistic. So that's why he gets a pass. That is another reason. But I told him, I said, when you have these questions, always preface them with, I do not mean to offend you, but I want to know. And so once I talked to him about slavery, and then he said, well, I don't know. I don't want to upset you. I said, no, well, this is what those teaching moments are for. Ask me the question. He's like, why do black people need special rights? So now I'm going to give you I'm going to tell you the answer that I gave him, because that's basically the answer that I would give this bitch, since we're supposed to be equal. I'm like, no, Will, we don't want special rights. We just want the same rights that you have as a white kid. I said, you're a kid of privilege, your parents have money, you know, you can do it and say and go anywhere you want to. I said, on the other hand, you know, if Alex is walking down, I said, classic example, me and you are walking down the street in Anaheim. I am black, yes, but I'm a black middle-aged woman walking with a white kid. Nobody's going to bother either one of us. But if my son, who was a black man, was walking down the street in Anaheim, there's a highly likely chance that he would get pulled over just for walking. I said, the only rights we want is to be able to walk down the street without being shot. We want to be able to go to school and not have to, and get, you know, go to any school we want to. We want to be able to get a loan at a decent interest rate as long as we have the proper credit. We want the same rights as every as you and your parents have. That's all. But we don't. We are so far from equal. Oh my God! These white people. Is there a special? And I'm asking now. I'm asking you to speak for the entire white race, Bob. Because now the question is back to you. What is it? Is it really privilege, or is it just assholery?
I don't think it, I the six and one half doesn't. No, it's well, a lot of it's ignorance.
Right.
And see, and this young woman is pretty, thin, petite, white, bleached blonde. I'm guessing she didn't grow up hard.
Right.
And in her world, and in her mind, and in her imagination, people of color are equal.
Right.
You know, because, you know, she would never cut in front of in front of the line of at Lutece. You know, she'd never take the last piece of Chateaubriand at brunch if a person of color was reaching for it. It doesn't dawn on her that there aren't any people of color in her world.
Right. And this is where you have to say, do you know? I'm not even saying, please don't say, some of my best friends are black. But do black people actually enter your world? Like with Jan, the only black person she knew growing up was her maid. It doesn't dawn on white people that they can go their entire lives and function and do shit.
Look, I acknowledge the nature of my existence here in West Virginia. There was a concerted effort a lot of years ago, largely led by the United Mine Workers of America, to drive people of color out of this area where I live.
Mm-hmm.
There was a traditional part of town that was the black community,
and I know they didn't call it the black community.
Well, I mean, it was where black folks lived.
No, I'm just saying that wasn't what they called it.
Not back then. No. I'm sure you know what they called it. But it is at least still memorialized in the little museum maintained by the city, in its city hall. That is not to say, I mean, West Virginia is not an exclusively white place, but it is a very, very white place.
And this is why I have to school Jan, because when they hear the word privilege, they automatically, get their hackles up. Well, I don't have, I grew up, I had a hard life. I wasn't privileged. You don't know, you.
Well, I mean, most white folks don't know about the speech or the talk.
Right.
And they can't imagine that it was easier to shoot Michael Brown because he was black, or Trayvon Martin because he was black. Because, they wouldn't do that.
Right.
But little Tommy here is nowhere near done, because whenever a woman who is just absolutely swimming in white privilege asks a question like that, she really and she's a wingnut.
She doesn't want an answer.
She doesn't want an answer. She's already got one. You want to grab something to hang on to?
Yeah, I'm okay. Go for it.
Get the hockey puck.
Seems like people of color can say whatever the hell they want and get a free pass, but when I speak my truth, I'm your target. Somehow telling me to go die makes you feel supreme? Listen, I know racism exists, and it's not going to stop if our leaders keep exploiting the divide.
But. And you'll notice she just climbs right up on the cross and starts hammering the nails. Poor her. Yep. Poor little her, Tracy.
She has to speak her truth. But I speak my truth. What the Vietnamese girl that did your nails didn't do it quite right.
Yeah. And they are a lovely, you know, and they are a lovely shade of pink, I might note. Almost.
You know, that's the kind of stuff that makes me crazy. It's like, because they don't get it. And it's not because, and see, a lot of these people are pretty intelligent. And if they shut up and listen to what he was saying and take themselves out of the equation, because it's not about you. It really, really isn't about you. It's about the fact that you have been fortunate enough to be born white in this country. It's about the fact that I don't have the same rights as you do, even though they're supposedly guaranteed. I don't have them. You know, I'm at that age, like I said, I'm a middle-aged black woman. 3 weeks from today, I'll be 50 years old. Nobody's messing with me anymore. I actually almost got a ticket. This is when you know you're getting older. I was flying down the freeway the other day, flying in the cab. And the cop and I, the CHP drove up behind me and said, yo, taxi driver, slow down. And I was like, ooh, thank you. I was driving angrily. Was that drangly or whatever? Drangly? I was pissed. And I didn't even realize how fast I was going. But I just think about the fact.
And the cop just said, hey, slow it down, sister.
Right. And it shocked the fuck out of me.
Well, that was nice. I mean, no, that was nice.
But no, I was shocked and I was happy because I didn't realize how fast I was going. And I was clocking 80. I was definitely clocking 80, but I was pissed because somebody had made
me. He could have ruined your day.
Not ruined, but ruined my day. And so I was, you know, but I'm just thinking, he was cool and everything. Like I said, he is scared the hell out of me because he's on a loudspeaker. but like I said, he could have ruined my day, but he didn't. But I'm, you know, it was that rare instance that, you know, he probably realized I had a fare. I was working. I was just going about my day. But the thing is, what if it could have been a totally different situation had it been a different CHP officer and my son? You know, I tell people the fear that I have I try not to use that word fear, but I have real concerns. You know, every time my son goes outside the house, I have to worry whether or not he's going to come back home. And it's not because of anything that he's done, but just because of what he looks like. And that's real. And this is what I tell people, when you get to that, when you know what that feels like, then you can talk to me. Then you know, when you have to worry about your child being pulled over or shot.
Until that time, you're just not going to have a whole lot of sympathy for her truth.
Yeah, her truth.
Because, see, somebody said something nasty to her on the interweb tubes. Whereas, you know, it's impossible for, you know, her to be a racist. Everybody is responsible for her little hurt fifis. So let me back up just a hair so we get it all in context.
I'm not equal. I'm waiting. Seems like people of color can say whatever the hell they want and get a free pass. But when I speak my truth, I'm your target. Somehow telling me to go die makes you feel supreme? Listen, I know racism exists, and it's not going to stop if our leaders keep exploiting the divide.
Notice how she specifically used the word supreme, Tracy? You know, white supremacy. She's saying that the real problem is black supremacy.
Right.
Isn't this fun?
You know, that's a real problem in this country.
Yeah, well, you know, the Black Klan, right.
Yeah.
The new Black Panther parties are still making Bill O'Reilly wet himself. You know, both of them. Both of them.
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah. Okay, so a little more.
I talk about race and race baiting because, quite frankly, most white people are afraid to. They don't want to say something wrong and offend anyone or, heaven forbid, get labeled a racist. It's terrifying, so they say nothing.
See, now, what she means, because, see, I know, I talk about it. Malloy talks about it. Lots of people on the progressive left talk about issues of race. But we try to talk about it with a degree of understanding and sensitivity. Whereas what this twit is talking about is she doesn't understand why she gets in trouble when she says stupid shit like this.
Because stupid.
And, you know, don't forget, because stupid.
That too.
I mean, it would not be worth handing her the bucket of warm spit to find out if she could pour it out with directions on the bottom. But, you know, I'm betting against.
I don't play that game. I don't care if you call me a racist. If that makes you feel better, do it.
Well, except it obviously does bother her because she's having a personal meltdown moment on Glenn Beck's weird little TV network. Or maybe it's all just theater.
I'm not going to stop calling out this crap, and it's not because I don't like black people. It's because some in the black entertainment community, like Jesse Williams, believe the only way to empower is to pit black Americans against white Americans in some kind of a dominance battle, a melanin showdown. I don't want any part of that.
Well, I don't think she's got much to worry about in a melanin showdown, Tracy. I mean, granted, I've got the video images, but you'll just have to take it on faith.
Melanin
showdown.
Showdown.
See, wait. If she was a little more hip, she would have made it a melanin throwdown.
Right. Melanin showdown. Okay, I've heard it all. I have no words because she, in a word, is stuck on stupid.
Well, we've got an observation coming from Steve in China. He said, under the subject line "TV Barbie," but the white privilege people never know jack about the other side of town, and never need to. And the poor white trash that probably do know a few black people have no political voice either. And the stupid ones are trained to see common enmity rather than common cause. Much as you'll find more overt racism in many northern cities and more general tolerance in the south. What you say or share in common, they just ain't the same thing. By the way, Steve adds, his words, not mine, that little bitch, even her accent marks her as daddy's little princess. Or, you know, high school slut. Regards, Steve in China. Oh, God, don't tell. Oh, please. Please don't tell Tommy Lauren. Oh my God, she'd probably have a 3-hour hissy on the blaze. Okay, so you want to wrap this? You want to finish this up, or I mean, can you take this, Tracy?
No, I'm good.
I mean, she's got a couple more nails to drive, and then she's got to put her designer crown of thorns on, and put her Ernie sign up. I'm right nailed in. Here we go.
I don't think black Americans are weak. I don't think you're victims. I think you're strong, proud, and free Americans, just like the rest of the people in this country. I don't think you need special treatment or gold stars for your existence. That's insulting to you as individuals, as Americans. We need a race conversation in this country badly, and it starts with an open and honest conversation, not inhibited, timid, and head shy and beating around the bush. If I need to be the lightning rod that sparks some honesty, well, here I am. I'm sorry the truth rattles your reality, but you won't silence me. Those are my final thoughts. God bless you. God bless America. And take care.
Yeah. No one's trying. I don't think anybody's trying to silence her, Tracy. Do you?
No,
I mean,
she has her right to her opinion.
And she has. And you know what? She has an absolute right to her stupidity.
Yes. She owns it so well. You know.
And she's going to be the lightning rod. I mean, honest to God, attention starved much? Bless her little heart. She wants a job on Fox so bad she can taste it.
Right. Oh, that's right, because Glenn Beck has his own, he does have his own station.
Yeah, this is his own weirdo, this is his own weirdo network.
Is he on cable? Or what is?
Yeah, it's cable. How do you get it? Well, generally what happens is your cable company gets into a spat with a couple of networks that it doesn't want to pay. and then it takes them off the air, and it puts Glenn Beck's The Blaze on. That's what happened with, like, Suddenlink over in Beckley.
Oh.
One day they had Comedy Central, the next day they had The Blaze.
Oh, no.
Yeah, really.
I was... somebody sent me a link the other day. It was an old clip of Chatty Say Baker, and it was back in the early 80s, in the mid-80s, when she was actually speaking with one of the ministers at our church about homosexuality and AIDS. And it was an amazing, it blew me away, because she was that person that was, you know, asking honest to goodness questions, but it wasn't in such a way, because she was like, you know, talking to him about, because he had AIDS, she was talking to him about what it's like to be a gay man in this country, a gay Christian, and all these things, and he talking to him at a time where, you know, people didn't talk to people with AIDS, especially, you know, so-called Christians. And it was just, I have to see if I could find it, because it was amazing. And she was so earnest. And with her, because she's like, I know Christians have been treating you horribly, and, you know, and the guys of Christianity, but, you know, you are a child of God. I mean, she just went on and on. I was, wow, tell me say. And then, you know, fast forward, I played the clips of Jim Baker, but I hadn't seen him in years. What is this? He's like Skeletor. He looks rather creepy.
Oh, have you not seen him hustling his big bucket of apocalypse pudding?
Yes, and so, because, you know, when you watch something on YouTube, once you watch it, they have a whole thing of videos that are kind of related to what you want, you know, what you have previously watched. And they had him, you know, with his apocalypse food. And I'm just like, wow. Wow.
Yeah. I got a note in from Tim, who's hoping you're going to add on to the house, because he still wants
another
room. He still wants that bedroom. Subject line, speaking about equality, and I think this is an interesting distinction. Tim says, as a person of color myself, I don't want equality only, I want equity. For example, equality allows a person of color to walk into a bank like a white person and ask for a loan, while equity will get you the loan. Equality will allow you to walk down the streets of Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills, while equity will prevent the Beverly Hills PD from shooting you. Equality will get you arrested for a crime, while equity will guarantee you the same outcome as the white guy who's arrested for the same offense. Equality is fine, but it's equity that guarantees you the same results as the white person.
You're here, Tim. You're here.
And by the way, just a little bit ago, Darlene up in Connecticut, with regard to our dear friends, the judge and Mr. Fenton in Georgia, said, you know, Bob, the white wing will make this judge out to be a hero. That's spelled H-E-E hyphen R-O-W. Hero. Yeah, because he's... he wasn't politically correct. And he said, and he said somebody looked like a queer. And now he's being persecuted for his faith.
Right. Because, you know, it's his right to say those kind of things. I am so tired of white people. I was watching on Father's Day on Turner Classic Movies. They had, you know, the tribute to Father. So they had, you know, Eddie, the courtship of Eddie's father, Life with Father, Father of the Bride. But I was watching Life with Father.
Oh, is Life with Father the one with William Powell and Father wasn't baptized?
Yes.
And God, I love that movie.
Right. I love that movie. But then I'm, you know, taking into account how much that's like one of my favorite movies, because I love William Powell. He's just awesome. Because like the day before, I watched two Thin Men movies.
Oh, see, now see, that's about that. What is it? William Powell and Myrna Loy? Is that who Myrna Loy was?
Yes.
She, those two in the Thin Man movies were just magnificent.
Amazing. So I'm watching this movie in a circa 1800 something, right? And then that whole, you know, affirmative action and equality thing came into my head. I'm watching these people with all this affluence, you know, and I'm wondering where the money came from, how much of it had to do with slavery. And I'm just thinking about what a head start his family has. I don't know if they still have money, if that family's still around, because it was based on a true story. But I'm watching it thinking, that's the whole, you know, equity thing. Because even though I know my folks were here, there's no way that they would have the same opportunities as those people, as, you know, that family with wealth. You know, in people of color, there's no such thing as there is generational wealth, but very few and far between. And like in this current economy, you know, there might have been wealth, like, you know, with me and my grandparents, not so much wealth, but, you know, steadfast, you know, staunchly middle class. But my son won't be able to reach that. Not the way this country is being run now. But I just think about, there was a cartoon called The Affirmative Action Race. And there's four people at the starting gate. There's a black person, I think it might have been an Indian or Hispanic person, a white woman, and a white man. And so the gun goes off, and the white man takes off. And what they're showing is years, like 1300, 1400, 1500, you know, 1600. And they're, you know, and it is running laps around the two people of color and the woman. And then at about, you know, the 1900s, is when the white woman gets to run around with the white guy, right? And then, you know, then you get into like the 1970s and stuff, and that's when the people of color get to run. But then you see, you know, there's landmines, there's like broken treaties, slavery, lack of, you know, access to education, to loans, to jobs, all sorts of things. And so, but as, you know, you're seeing this, you know, the white man is running around, he's doing a relay race when they handed the baton. So as that person, then they hand the baton to their son, and then to their son, and to their son, and it's, you know, the money bags are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and where everybody else is left behind. So that's where my mind went, you know, because that's how I think.
I think that's a level of analysis we would all do better to put to work from time to time, because these things there is meaning, and there is depth. I mean, it's kind of like the story that I had. Agnes pointed out to me a couple of days ago. The Jack Daniel's distillery in Tennessee is slowly acknowledging that Mr. Jack didn't know Jack about making whiskey. He was taught the whiskey making business by a black man who was owned by a Baptist minister who took a shine to Jack Daniel's. And the distillery is finally acknowledging that.
Kind of like Eli Whitney in the cotton gin.
Well, yeah, and kind of like the fact that George Washington didn't know from Shinola about making liquor either, but he had an entire team of enslaved human beings who ran his private personal distillery for him. There's a great deal of likelihood that most of the Southern liquor business, as with everything else, owes its very existence to black people.
Right. And God only thinks about how much of that over from Africa.
Well, they specifically noted that some of that technology came from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The fermentation technology. But it's been a wonderful conversation, Tracy. You have yourself a lovely evening. It's time to get out of here.
All well, you go ahead and do that thing. As usual, it's awesome. Take care of yourself, and we will talk again.
All right. Sounds good, Tracy. Drive careful.
Always. Bye-bye.
Bye now. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver. It is time for us to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for beating the Swede. I didn't think it was going to happen, but it did because of you. Thank you very, very much indeed. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. We will begin July with Friday on the Front Porch and Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Remember? Yeah. All right, y'all. Take care. Have a good night. Catch you tomorrow. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Night, y'all.